Iran's leader dismisses the United States' proposals in Vienna nuclear deal talks as, quote, arrogant, saying that they are not even worth a look. Iran's president says Tehran's decision to enrich uranium at 60% purity is a response to nuclear terrorism against the country. At least 2 children are killed and 4 others wounded in a Saudi attack on the Yemeni province of Sadr. Well, welcome to the studios from the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says proposals are made by the U.S. regarding the revival of the 2015 nuclear deal are not even worth a look. Ayatollah Khamenei also reiterated Iran's stance regarding the U.S. sanctions removal. He stressed that Tehran does not trust Washington's promises and wants to see the removal of sanctions first before it returns to its commitments under the nuclear deal. He insisted that the JCPOA negotiations should not be prolonged by the parties involved to become attritional. Ayatollah Khamenei criticizes the European negotiators for admitting to Iran's rightful stance, but failing to show independence from the U.S. when it comes to decision-making. Iran and the remaining signatories to the JCPOA have held talks in Vienna and are scheduled to meet again to salvage the nuclear deal. The U.S. jeopardized the agreement by unilaterally withdrawing from it in 2018 and reimposing sanctions on Iran. Iran's president says that Tehran has responded to what he called nuclear terrorism at Natanz nuclear facility by installing more modern centrifuges and enriching uranium to higher purity levels.
They wanted to disrupt the operations of IR-1 centrifuges, but Iran's first response was to replace those centrifuges with IR-6 ones so that they will understand they cannot deprive Iran of peaceful nuclear technology through wicked acts. As a second response, Iran will also increase uranium enrichment from 3.67% purity level to 60%.
Rouhani said Tehran replaced IR-1 centrifuges with IR-6 ones as the first response to the Israeli regime's move against Iran. The president added that Iran will not allow others to disrupt its peaceful nuclear program and will counter any plots in that regard. He reiterated that Iran will return to full compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal once the U.S. respects U.N. Security Council Resolution 2231 and removes all sanctions and Iran verifies the removal. The president underlined that Iran's activities have always been and will remain peaceful and under the supervision of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Iran says Sunday's act of sabotage against the country's Natanz facility amounts to nuclear terrorism and violates international law and the UN Charter. Iran's permanent representative to Vienna-based international organizations said the attack could have led to a leak of radioactive material. Kazem Gharibabadi accused Israel of conducting the attack and said the perpetrators of this cowardly act should be punished. He condemned the UN and the International Atomic Energy Agency for their inaction regarding the matter. He urged IAEA to take immediate measures to hold Israel accountable, saying that a failure would embolden the regime to continue its unlawful and destabilizing activities. Gharibabadi warned that Iran will take all necessary measures to protect itself and its citizens against any acts of terrorism or sabotage, and will decisively respond to any threat. He made the comments in a letter to the IAEA. The U.S. intelligence analysis has concluded that Iran is not undertaking activities toward developing a nuclear weapon. The study represents the conclusions of all 18 U.S. intelligence agencies. According to the report, analysts see few indications that Iran will seek to change course. Iran has always maintained that its nuclear program is peaceful and merely for civilian purposes. Tehran also says it has never sought to make weapons of mass destruction, including nukes. Iran is a member of the International Atomic Energy Agency, and its nuclear work has been under the IAEA's intense scrutiny. The Islamic Republic says it is committed to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT. Iran's leader has also issued a religious decree that bans building nuclear arms. Professor of Political Science Timothy Kurzweil says the U.S. admission that Iran is not seeking to build nuclear weapons is definitely an advantage for the Islamic Republic.
Well, I guess even the U.S. intelligence agencies have to tell the truth sometimes, and this is one example of it where, you know, they're saying what everybody else knows, is that the Iranian nuclear program is mostly directed towards domestic purposes of energy production and medicinal purposes, and there's no attempt to build a nuclear weapon. It's definitely an advantage to Iran now that there's been an admission that, it's a qualified admission, I suppose, they're saying at the moment, but still it's an admission that the program is at least being peacefully operated. And I guess that forces the U.S. to sort of negotiate in a way on different grounds than the way they were talking a couple of months ago. This combined intelligence report is happening at the exact moment this negotiation is taking place in Austria. And it's sort of, yeah, like I said, it's a give and take game where, mm-hmm. you know, they're admitting the truth in one area, but then still using, like, amping up the idea of Iran as a threat as a way of trying to maintain their position at the negotiating table.
Saudi Arabia has launched a fresh attack on Yemen, killing at least two children and wounding four others. Not the Latif Abushali joined us to give us more detail.
Two children were killed and four others were wounded, including women. And the new attack on Al-Rigwa area and Munabbeh directorate in Sada and northern of Yemen. This directorate, Munabbeh, is in the Saudi borders. It's being attacked on a daily basis mostly. It has been the worst place for the civilians to live, the Saudi borders, Munabbeh Directorate. Al-Rigwa also area has been targeted many times, and there was also a massacre in the area in December 2019 when Saudi Arabia launched an attack on the local market in this area and killed and wounded almost 40 people. Civilians in this place are being targeted on a daily basis. Even the farmers are being targeted. And Saudi Arabia is attacking the Sada governorate and the villages on the Saudi borders on a daily basis.
Russia once again warns the United States against any new, quote, unfriendly steps, saying that it would act decisively against such a move. Russian media said the warning was issued by President Vladimir Putin's foreign policy advisor, Yuri Lushakov, also invited the U.S. ambassador to Moscow for talks following Tuesday's phone call between Putin and his U.S. counterpart, Joe Biden. This follows reports that the White House is preparing new restrictions against the Kremlin. Russia says it must be ready for the worst-case scenario in terms of U.S. sanctions and is threatened to respond to any new restrictions in kind. Tensions have increased between the two sides over a number of issues, including the conflict in eastern Ukraine and the jailing of the Kremlin critic, Alexei Navalny. Tensions between Russia and Ukraine show no signs of abating. The escalation risks confrontation between Russia on the one side and the U.S. as well as NATO on the other. Russia is getting its troops prepared along the Ukraine border, citing NATO's threat. It seems the threat is limited to verbal rhetoric alone, and a war appears to be a distinct possibility.
Tensions are running high between Moscow and Kiev over the latest escalation in Ukraine's eastern Donbas region. NATO has expressed concern over Russia's military buildup in the area.
We are seriously concerned by ongoing developments, and NATO is monitoring the situation very closely.
NATO's chief said Russia's move is unjustified. He called on Moscow to end the buildup in and around Ukraine and stop what he called its provocations and de-escalate immediately. Ukraine has also called for sanctions on Russia over the measure.
We need measures which will deter Russia and which will contain its aggressive intentions. This could be, as the Secretary General mentioned, a new round of sanctions which would raise the price of Russian aggression.
Russia, however, has its own argument and has warned against what it calls fueling belligerent sentiment in Ukraine. Moscow accuses the U.S. and other NATO members of turning Ukraine into a, quote, a powder keg by increasing arms supplies to Kiev. It says the military support is a serious challenge to Russia, adding that Moscow would do everything possible to ensure its security. But what is Russia-Ukraine tension all about? A few weeks ago, Moscow deployed troops along the border with Ukraine following reports of renewed clashes between Ukrainian troops and pro-Russian forces in Donbas. Moscow accused Kiev of taking provocative measures near its border. In return, Ukraine, the U.S. and NATO accused Russia of sending troops and heavy weaponry to prop up militias in eastern Ukraine. But the Kremlin says there is nothing to fear, describing the repositioning of Russian armed units as a domestic issue.
Tensions between Russia and its Western adversaries, plus Ukraine, is so high that Russia earlier actually warned the U.S. to keep its warships away from Crimea for their own good. Russia has also said it has amassed its troops on Ukraine's border on the east due to NATO's troop presence there. It has also accused the U.S. and NATO of turning Ukraine into a powder keg by supplying arms to Kiev.
The tension between Russia and Ukraine has drawn reactions from other countries. In a meeting with his Ukrainian counterpart in Brussels, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken called Russia's military buildup very provocative.
The United States stands firmly behind the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine, and I'm here to reaffirm that with the foreign minister today. And that's particularly important at a time when we're seeing, unfortunately, Russia take very provocative actions.
Blinken had warned that if Russia acts recklessly or aggressively, there will be consequences. France and Germany have also called on Russia to halt a troop buildup on the border with Ukraine and reaffirm their support for Kiev in its confrontation with Moscow. Meanwhile, foreign ministers of the G7 countries have issued a joint statement calling the movement of Russian troops near the border with Ukraine threatening and destabilizing. But Turkey, a NATO member, had a different stance. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said Ankara was working to end the Ukraine-Russia tension while voicing military cooperation and support for Ukraine.
This is a very serious issue, and it seems like escalation comes from Ukrainian and NATO side. For some reason, I suspect the new Biden administration, they want to test Russia and Putin's resolve. Maybe they have a feeling that they can push the situation further, but it's a very kind of naive hope. Basically, what everybody has to be aware that the East Ukraine doesn't want to go back. They don't want to obey Kiev. They want to be either on their own or join Russia if that works out. They don't want to be part of Ukraine.
Many believe that the U.S. decision to send warships to the volatile area would complicate the situation.
That's exactly what it is. I think United States want to test Russia. They also, it's for United States, we have to be aware that we have a change of scenery. Many people who were in State Department and the government who were ousted under Trump, they came back. And they want to resurrect their failed policy vis-a-vis Ukraine. They started the whole thing. They started, this campaign of splitting Ukraine apart, pulling it toward, NATO. So they think that they can, try it. And if, while trying it, they are testing, Putin's resolve, Russian resolve. They also don't have much to lose. It's not their soldiers who are going to get killed there. It'll be either Eastern Ukrainians or Kiev forces will be killed. And then it'll be like the usual scenario, usual script, which we very well know. No matter what happens, Russia will be blamed, new sanctions will be introduced, and among the sanctions, United States love to do the sanctions.
With tensions simmering in eastern Ukraine, U.S. media are happy to push the narrative that Russia is the aggressor and is preparing to invade its neighbor. The reports ignore the fact that the Donetsk and Luhansk republics in eastern Donbass region declared independence from Ukraine back in 2014 in response to a U.S.-backed coup. It seems that the United States, along with its longtime ally NATO, are establishing a united front against Russia. What is certain, however, is that such escalations risk spiraling out of control and sucking all sides into a vortex that would be in no one's favor.
The U.S. Secretary of State says Washington will work with its NATO allies on a coordinated military pullout from Afghanistan. Antony Blinken added that the moment has come to bring American troops back home. British media have also reported the U.K. is preparing to follow Washington's step. Earlier, the German defense minister said the Western military alliance will likely join Washington in withdrawing all troops from the country in September. U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to officially announce the withdrawal plan later on Wednesday. U.S. pullout plan by September 11th misses a May 1st deadline that it had agreed with the Taliban militant group last year. The U.S. has some 2,500 troops in the country. It's part of a NATO mission in the country with a total of 9,600 forces. A supply convoy belonging to the U.S.-led military coalition has been targeted in southern Iraq. Security sources told local media that the convoy carrying logistic equipment was targeted by a roadside bomb in Dikar province. The source said the incident left no casualties or damage. U.S.-led forces and their supply convoys in Iraq have repeatedly come under attack in recent months. That's amid growing anti-American sentiment since the assassination of top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas in January of last year. Following the U.S. killing of anti-terror icons, the Iraqi parliament also voted for the withdrawal of American troops from the country. Palestinians have condemned Israel's move to prevent the call to prayer on the first day of Ramadan as a racist crime. Nabil Abu Rudaina, a spokesperson for Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, called the move hostile and aggressive and warned of its consequences. He said that such policies can turn the current conflict into an overt religious war. Abu Rudaina said the Israeli measure has been a blatant violation of human rights that can undermine the foundations of peace and security. On Tuesday, Israeli forces cut off the loudspeakers of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem outlets to prevent the nighttime call to prayer. Palestinian authorities called on the Jordanian ambassador in Israel to express their strong protest against the Zionist regime's action. We were earlier joined by our correspondent, Mona Kandil, who gave us more details about the Israeli regime's restrictions for Muslims in the holy month of Ramadan.
Well, in the past, the Israeli authorities several times brought a law at the Knesset in order to prevent the adhan, the calls for prayers in Jerusalem Al-Quds, because the Israelis have been saying that the adhan, the calls of prayers, had been annoying them, but this law was not approved, and Palestinians protested it, and it didn't pass. However, the Israelis and Israeli media claimed that yesterday it was a commemoration of the so-called Israel's Memorial Day, where Israel remembered its fallen soldiers, those who were killed during the wars in the last 52 years. The Israelis, of course, prevented and cut off the loudspeakers of the Al-Aqsa Mosque to prevent people at the calls over prayers. But at the same time, people and worshippers were prevented to move freely and to reach the Al-Aqsa Mosque yesterday on the first day of the holy month of Ramadan, with the strict measures being carried out by the Israeli soldiers against the Palestinian Muslims in the city of Jerusalem Al-Quds.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The month of Allah presents Ahkam, Islamic Commandments of Fasting by Hujjatul Islam Khakdaman.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Hello and welcome to our program. Congratulations for entering this month. Our program is called the Month of Allah, and I'm very happy to be here and to have the chance to be able to talk about this month and also the specific ahkam that are surrounding our matter, which is fasting. I'll start without any more explanations. The first thing that is really important about fasting is your intentions, and it is important to know how the intention is made and what is the time and quality of that. By intending, we mean that before the day begins, before the adhan for the morning, you need to have in your heart intention for fasting, only for God, or for the satisfaction of God. You need to be intending to do a couple of things that you know about fasting, which completes this circle of fasting. Now the time, it is said that it starts actually when the adhan of Maghrib, the day before that, starts, and up to the adhan of the morning. So you have this period of time to have the intention in your heart. Now, is it necessary for us to say something and to show God, for example, vocally, to say something that we are intending, or to even pass it in our hearts? No, it's not needed. Just doing whatever God has commanded in this month, which is, you know, it's about fasting, like not eating, not drinking, not doing a set of things that you know about fasting. Just doing them for God is enough. So intention does not need to be said, does not to be even be specifically, you know, tended to in your heart. No, you just want to do that, and you start your action when the morning starts. So first thing about fasting. Second thing is that sometimes we have obligatory fasts, like in this month, and sometimes we have recommended fasts, like in other months, that we do for extra rewards from God. In obligatory fasts, it is really important to have this pure intention, because fasting, like other activities and like other kind of worships that we have in our religion, is a kind of worshiping that we do for God, for only satisfaction of God. So like saying prayers that you cannot do for other people's, you know, desires, for other people's admirations, for other people's satisfaction. Fasting is the same. And all of that importance goes to your intentions. Do I really do that for God, or do I really do that even for somebody else to see that I'm fasting? Probably I'm a good person, so they will admire me and something like that. No, it needs to be pure. If it's not pure, then you are not fasting. Your fast is broken. It's not validated. And one of the really good rewards of this pure intention is the fact that it's a very, very rewarding process and practice for you. Because one day you practice to do whatever God said, and to not commit sins, not to commit things that break your fast. So that practice is going to pay off afterwards. But if fasting is not going to be like that, if it's going to be for other people's desires and for other people's tears and admirations, then it won't have the effect that it should have. So it is really important to specifically teach our child about this important matter of the intention, which the amount of the reward, the amount of virtue of the acts that we do, and the amount of importance and significance, they are all relying on your intentions. What is your intention when you want to start fasting? It is only for God, or no? It is not. It is for God, some part of it, some part of it for somebody else. No. So we should clarify, we should cleanse our intentions. So may God bless us and give us more understanding about this pure and holy month. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
Inside Israel. An Israeli court ruled that any Arabic language school or funding transport for Arab school children in the northern city of Carmiel is banned. The court says that anything otherwise would alter city's demographic balance and damage its character.
Until the years 2000, maybe even less, we had students who took the final exams in Arabic. No more ever since. Students lack the motivation. For them, the Arabic language, as I see that, is related to the Arab itself. We don't like the Arab, we don't need the Arab, and we don't want the Arab. So why do we need his language? It's totally equivalent, unfortunately.
In its decision, the court cited so-called nation-state basic law. This law was passed in 2018 and caused public uproar against it, inside Israel and outside Israel, for its apartheid nature. This move is not unprecedented, but shows Israel's racist policies on the indigenous people of the land. An Israeli court has ruled that the northern city of Carmiel is a Jewish city and that Arabic language schools or funding transport for Arab school children are liable to alter city's demographic balance and damage its character. Thus, it has blocked access to schools for Arab children in the northern city of Carmiel. The court implied that facilitating this access would incentivize Palestinian Arab citizens of Israel to move into the city, thus damaging its Jewish character. This is also true for funding the transportation of Palestinian Arab children living in the city to schools and surrounding communities. The ruling came after a lawsuit which charged that the city of Carmiel was violating its obligation to provide transportation for Arab Israeli children to local schools was dismissed out of hand. In the case, the plaintiffs sued the Carmiel municipality for 25,000 shekels, approximately $7,500, for transportation expenses for two Arab siblings, a brother and sister, who were forced to travel to a school in a nearby town because there are no Arabic language schools located in the city. For years, families and activists have demanded that the Carmiel municipality fund school transportation for Israeli Arab children and has appealed to the Israeli Education Ministry to widen the map of neighboring communities associated with Carmiel school transportation program, but obviously to no avail.
The judge ruled, actually, ruling is not surprising because the goal of establishing Jewish towns in the midst of Galilee is actually to Judaize the Galilee and prevent a majority of Arabs living there. So they don't want the Arabs to feel comfortable in the mixed towns, okay? If they want to, you know, just go and live, pay, you know, property taxes and stuff, but they don't want them to establish, you know, Arabic symbols, like the language is one big symbol. So they refer to the national law, national bill, the, you know, that was put in state in 2018, which, you know, clearly states that the state of Israel is, you know, for the Jewish people, and they actually demoted the Arabic language from being an official language into a language with a special status. But that status was not defined really in a way so that anybody could come and refer to the national bill as they did in this ruling and base a ruling saying that, you know, Arabic is not, you know, a language and this is the Jewish state, and just, you know, use the basic law to, you know, to say no to any demand that has a flavor of nationality, such as the Arabic language. Like in Carmiel, here in Nazareth Elit, or as recently changed, the city, his name was changed to Nof HaGalil, we have a long struggle here for many years to establish an Arabic school in the city of Nof HaGalil, where at least, you know, according to the Ministry of Education, there's about 40% of children in this city between the ages 5 and 19 that are Arab in the city, okay? And the population of the Arabs in this city is about 30%. So far, we only have kindergartens, and starting, you know, from first grade through the 12th grade, we have to go and find solutions outside the city with an ongoing refusal. So we have been in the court since 2013. The political struggle actually started way before, like at least 15 years before. We are actually awaiting the Supreme Court's ruling on our case. The reason, in my opinion, and my many others who are in this struggle with me, that the municipality and actually the Ministry of Education refused our request to establish an Arab school, is actually to protect and preserve the Jewish, the Jewish status in the city or the Jewish ethos. And so for them, we are only residents. We should not have any nationality rights. They don't want us to establish a community, because if you establish a school, that means you establish a community. My son will have other kids in his age living in the neighborhood, and then there will be relations between me and that child's parents, and then you will have actually a living community that grows and feels at home, more at home in the city, as opposed to just using it as like a hotel, because we all work outside, study outside, and then just come and sleep here. So there's no real community life here. So they don't want us to feel at home here. And recently they ran people started demonstrating in front of the city municipality. First they ask for a school, and then they will ask for a mosque. Presenting actually the fact that they don't want any symbol of Arab, the Arab culture, whether it is Muslim or Christian or the language, inside the city.
On social media, the conversation took a different turn. Raymond says Israel continues to steal Palestinian land on which to build illegal settlements, in the opinion of almost every nation on earth. When Israel shows its disregard for human rights and ignoring international law, it gets criticized. Citizen Jane says Israel invokes nation-state law in denying transport to Palestinian school children in Galilee. Damascus Frey said Netanyahu literally said, according to the basic nationality law we passed, Israel is the nation state of the Jewish people, and only it.
People say that we should forget about 48 and we should just start a new chapter. But what happened in 48, namely the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people, never stopped ever since 48. And therefore, we have to continue to remind ourselves that this ethnic cleansing and apartheid system is still around, and nothing changed ever since 48. And Kamiel is just an example for what we all know. I mean, those who are sensitive enough for human rights know that being Palestinian or an Israeli Arab in Israel means to be a second-class citizen. Being a Jew means to be a first-class citizen.
The court based its ruling on the so-called nation-state basic law. This law was passed in 2018 and caused public uproar against it, inside Israel and outside Israel, for its apartheid nature. On July 19, 2018, the Israeli Knesset voted 62-55 to approve the Jewish nation-state basic law that constitutionally enshrines Jewish supremacy and the identity of Israel as the nation-state of the Jewish people. This law, which has distinct apartheid characteristics, guarantees the ethnic-religious character of Israel as exclusively Jewish and entrenches the privileges enjoyed by Jewish citizens, while simultaneously anchoring discrimination against the Israeli Arab minorities and legitimizing exclusion, racism, and systematic inequality. Carmiel was one of several cities and towns strategically established starting in the mid-1960s as part of an Israeli initiative to attempt to expand the Jewish presence in the Galilee, where Arabs made up most of the population. Carmiel is one of more than 700 communities the state has built for the Jewish population since Israel's founding, compared with none built for the Arab population. In March 1976, the Israeli military began confiscating and expanding several Jewish towns in the area. This was met by confrontations, including general strikes and street battles. This is known as Land Day and is commemorated every year in March.
These towns that were established in the Galilee, and starting in the 50s, 60s, and on, had a clear goal, which is to Judaize the Galilee, okay, which means establishing Jewish settlements in the midst of the Arab towns to prevent Arabic continuous territory, okay? So the language of Arabic is, you know, part of, you know, it's part of a, it's a, it's a national representation. It is, it represents the language, it represents the culture. So for them, it contradicts the goal, which is to have a Jewish-only settlement. Another aspect of this struggle is the refusal to accept that we have been here forever, okay, and that that these towns like Nofa Galil, Carmiel, Afula were all established on confiscated Arab land. So like Palestinians living in Nazareth, in Kareni, in Ain Mahel, in Iksal, all these surrounding Arab towns, they had all, like, their lands were lost by the confiscation in order to establish the city, Nofa Galil. So where, like, the official language of the municipality is that we are coming here to attain a quality of life, because there's no quality of life in neighboring cities. Well, this is obviously a sarcastic, you know, way of looking at things, because the city of Nazareth, which has double the population of Nofa Galil, is sitting on only 14 square kilometers, whereas Nofa Galil, which is half, and all on confiscated land established in 1957, is residing on at least 33 square kilometers. So it's very normal that people living in high density will want to emigrate and move to a town which is offering more places to live in.
On social media, the conversation took a different turn. David says that Israel allocated 99.7% of public land in the occupied West Bank to Israeli settlers, illegal under international law. Only 0.24% went to the Palestinians. The nation-state law embedded apartheid. Have a look at it. The simple truth is that people had to be driven off their land. Noga says Netanyahu, the nation-state lawman who made Arabic not an official language and defined only Jewish communal rights in Israel, tells the Likud, "I believe in Jabotinsky's vision that every Israeli citizen should enjoy all rights. We appeal to Arab citizens, this time vote for us." Kieran says the nation-state law turns non-Jews in Israel into second-class citizens. In the occupied territories, Palestinians are under military law, while settlers are under Israeli civil law. Apartheid in action.
Well, this is what happens when you have the concept of a settler nation. A settler nation is a nation that basically invalidates the people of the land that they wish to settle. It's ethnic cleansing. The way that, you know, we can see that whatever the Israelis have done, or the Zionists really from the very earliest start, because, you know, my grandfather was a Zionist doctor who was kicked out of being the Zionist doctor of Palestine in Jerusalem in 1911 because he said, well, I'm a doctor, I take care of Arabs, and they said no, and they sent him away. And that's why he came to the United States. So the fact is that this is a country which has its basis in the deprivation of health, life, land to the people, and the Imperial was a beautiful place which had all kinds of gardens and parks, and it was beautiful before the Israelis took it over. But they did it as a pass call on the way, I think, to the northern part when they took, because it was established in 1964. In 1967 came the war where the Israelis captured Golan.
Although Arabs now constitute around 6% of Carmel's population, that is around 2,760 people, there is still no Arabic language school inside the city. As such, Arab Israeli parents are forced to send their children to various schools in the area. According to the Education Ministry, it doesn't take part in school organization, just the funding and content of what's being learned. It says that the money goes to municipalities and that they use it for transportation and schools. The ministry says the funding is sufficient. However, the municipalities say the funding is not. Many of them are accused of pocketing the money. This dilemma has been faced by the Arab population for decades now. It seems that Israel wants to further isolate the Arabs. At least, that is how they feel. Through decades of neglect and now political isolation, the conditions might be just getting worse.
From me and the production team here at Inside Israel, it's goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The month of God. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, Ramadan has come again, and we have been invited to fast in this blessed month. From today, you'll be listening to a special series of programs titled The Month of God. This series will consist of three parts: moralities, Islamic laws, and supplications. We hope that God will accept your and our acts of worship and prayers. Stay tuned, please.
The blessed month of Ramadan has come again. According to the Islamic narrations, this month is the month of God and God's banquet for the Islamic Ummah. God receives the faithful in this month with warm hospitality. God's banquet, unlike the worldly ones, is spiritual. In fact, God tells his servants to abstain from pleasures, even the permissible ones like eating, drinking, and so on. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says, Ramadan has been called such because it burns the sins. In other words, the root of the word Ramadan in Arabic means burning. The fifth infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, also says on the virtue of this blessed month, he who fasts the day in this month and spends the night in worship will be pure as the day he was born from his mother. The Prophet of Islam said on the threshold of the month of Ramadan, O people, the month of God has turned toward you with blessing, mercy, and forgiveness. It is month that is the best of months with God. Its days and nights are the best of days and months, and its hours are the best of hours. It is the month in which you have been invited to God's banquet and have been favored and dignified by him. In this month, whenever you come toward God and sit at his presence, God will accept your prayer. In this month, help the poor and the destitute, respect the elderly, be kind toward children, and visit your relatives. O people, he who makes his temperament good in this month, on the day when steps sleep over the Sirat Bridge, will pass over it easily. Thus, ask God with honesty, sincerity, and a pure heart to help you for fasting and recitation of the Quran, because miserable is the one who is deprived of God's mercy in this blessed and bounteous month. According to the Islamic laws, the sink of the crescent of Ramadan is possible in five ways. First, the individual sees it himself. Second, he becomes certain through hearing from others whom he trusts. Third, two just men say that they have seen the new moon. Fourth, the preceding month, Sha'ban, is 30 days. Fifth, the just ruler of the Islamic country announces the start of the month of Ramadan. The real property and wealth of human being is supplication to God. To achieve this property requires learning the practice of the Prophet and leaders of religion. After the Prophet of Islam, his infallible successors have bequeathed to us ample concepts in the form of prayers and supplications. A considerable amount of these prayers and supplications belong to the blessed month of Ramadan. On the first eve of Ramadan, the fourth infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Sajjad, peace upon him, used to recite this prayer. Praise belongs to God who has guided us to his gratitude and made us worthy of thanking his goodness and granted us the reward of the righteous. And praise belongs to God who graced us with his religion and specialized us for his path and caused us to march in his ways of goodness, to move in them with his grace and favor toward his satisfaction. Such a praise that he accepts from us, and thereby becomes pleased with us. And praise belongs to God who designated among those paths his month Ramadan, the month of fasting, the month of Islam, the month of purity, the month of trial, the month of uprising, the month in which he sent down the Quran, a guidance for people and clear proofs of guidance, and differentiator of right from wrong. And for this reason, clarify the superiority of this month over other months on the basis of ample respect and obvious virtues. So, he forbade what is permissible in other months, and, in order to revere it, he prohibited foods and drinks in it, and determined the specific time limit for it, which he, the Exalted and High, does not allow to be preceded or delayed. Then, he made one of its nights superior over the nights of 1,000 months, and called it Night of Qadr, in which angels and Ruh, the greatest angel, descend upon their Lord's commandments for every affair. And that night is healthy and blessed till dawn for any of his servants due to his ordainment that has become binding. O God, greet Muhammad and his progeny and inspire us the recognition of this month's superiority and its glorification and abstention from the forbidden acts, and assist us for fasting in it through keeping our bodily organs aloof from sins and using them in what satisfies you. Help us not to hear with our ears what is futile, and not to see with our eyes what is pervert, and not to extend our hands toward what is forbidden, and not to walk toward what you have banned. And help us so that our stomachs are not filled except with halal, and our tongues do not articulate but for what you have said. And help us so that we do not strive except for what takes us near to your reward, and so that we do not acquire except what preserves us from your punishment. Then purify all these from pretension and show off and seeking of reputation in a way that we do not associate in them anyone with you and do not pursue any purpose but you. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.